if you're making a 10% net profit and you're paying a portion of that in taxes, you have even less cash left over to go and fund that next inventory purchase. And that's an important thing that we include in our models and forecasts. If your accountant is not well-versed in e-commerce, this could be a big issue for you. If you're Shopify or whatever platform you're using, your settings are set correctly to collect sales tax. You will be collecting cash every day for that sales tax, but you have a liability that grows as well. And so that cash in and cash out should not be hitting your P&L. It should go to the balance sheet.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company spend with magical features. And today I've got Jeff Lowenstein with me here from Free to Grow CFO. Jeff specializes in e-commerce CFO services, and he has an interesting story about how he was able to find 400K worth of stock down the back of P&L, down the back of a couch for a new client. And we're going to get into the nitty-gritty on what makes e-commerce a good and a challenging business to be in and why you need a high-level CFO to make sure it can win for you. So Jeff, thanks for coming along today. Maybe just kick things off. Let's get a bit of background going. Where are you in the world? And just tell us about where you've come from and where's your journey been up until now in founding Free to Grow CFO?
I am here in New York City. I work from home. We are a remote business at Free to Grow CFO. So we have people across the US and we have an offshore team as well that we rely on. And yeah, so we're remote. I'm here in New York. I had my first child about 12 weeks ago. So that's been the big life update for me here at home, and been enjoying working from home, getting to hang out with him in between calls.
Congratulations.
It's a fun thing.
That's great. So let me just bring you back. Where did you study in New York? What did you study? What did you do out of college? And what have you done between then and starting your current business?
Yeah, let me give you the walk through the resume here. So I did undergrad at Penn in Philly. And then pretty much most of my career has been in corporate finance and strategic finance. I worked actually in Caesars Entertainment out in Las Vegas for a couple years there. And so that's a story for another day, probably much more boring than what you're imagining in your head right now. But yeah, that was a great learning experience to see how a big company works and really think about across tens of thousands of employees and, dozens of properties, how do you roll up financials and design processes that work at scale is a totally different challenge than what I'm doing today in more of the startup land. So I spent a couple of years at Caesars and then spent a few years over in Brooklyn working at Etsy. And I was on the strategic finance team there. And we helped kind of refound that team. We started over from scratch and rebuilt a lot of the financial structure there. I joined there in 2015. And it's also where I learned the whole e-commerce world. I didn't know it before. And it was really fascinating to me. E-commerce is one of these things that, well, first of all, I use it every day, right? I'm always shopping and hitting buy now on my Prime account, but I always love, finding new products, and I'm a sucker for a good targeted ad on Instagram, right? So I always loved it as a consumer. But the other thing I found intellectually challenging and stimulating is that it's always changing. It's so dynamic. Every time you think you have it figured out, something massive in the industry will change. So it keeps you on your toes for sure. There was one more key role before starting my own fractional CFO business. And I got an MBA after Etsy and then spent a couple years at an e-commerce aggregator. And so we were buying brands. I was on the M&A side, was an early employee there, met hundreds of brands, analyzed their financials, negotiated with them, did due diligence. We only actually closed on a subset of those brands, but that was a real crash course in the financial guts of an e-commerce business, right? We really got in there and, reconstructed everything.
Okay, so that's super unique in and of itself. So a lot of people have experience in a small set of brands or small set of businesses that you're working in, but you've obviously had that breadth across a lot of them, which has led to this specialism, if you like. So let's start off with some definitions, some basics. You're a fractional CFO. What's the difference between a controller, fractional CFO, accountant? A lot of listeners will already know this, but if you're, let's say, owner of an e-com brand right now, who's trying to figure out how to grow their financial competence, I think that's some good table stakes to get underneath us.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a great question that I'm glad to cover and a very common one. A lot of times you can hear the term CFO and think that it includes everything under the sun in the finance department, but there's a lot of different specialized roles in the finance world. We offer some of those, not all of them at Free to Grow. So starting on the CFO side, right, there is a core service of FP&A, which is taking numbers, doing an analysis, looking at trends, looking at KPIs, and trying to tell a story from the numbers. So that's what I think of as FP&A. It's taking that story and like trying to shape a narrative of what's going to happen in the future. People hear CFO though, and they also think about raising capital or M&A or other more high level transaction focused or strategic initiatives. And that's certainly part of what a fractional CFO does. But to be clear, in our offering, we do both what I just mentioned, which is we support capital raises as well as the FP&A. And the FP&A is really what a lot of startups in the e-com world need, even though they may not come to us saying, oh, I really need an FP&A analyst. So that's an important nuance on the CFO side. And then in the accounting world, there's bookkeepers, there's what we call the accounting manager, or there's also a controller. And then there's the whole tax world, right? So CPAs. And then there's also financial planning, right? Which is a different thing where they can be looking at the wealth of the business owner and trying to help them plan that out. And so in our firm today, we don't do any tax. We have great people we refer business to, but that's just not our world. We excel at the CFO and FP&A piece, and we excel at the bookkeeping and accounting manager and oversight piece. Our philosophy is that marrying the CFO and the accounting together provides unique value because a CFO can only do so much without the right financial data. And an accounting person, if they do their job excellently, right, that's great, but it might be meaningless without the right interpretation of that data, which is what the CFO can provide. So those two things, we believe, go hand in hand.
I think you put your finger on the crux there, which is, let's face it, the vast majority of businesses just do their accounts to pay their tax.
Yes.
I hadn't realized until you said it there, but like FP&A, I've been hearing this term and I'm like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. That's the operational stuff, which isn't just paying your tax. So everyone aspires towards this idea of using your accounts to drive your business and make decisions. I think if we're honest, most of the time, that's a pipe dream. Where I see you positioned is if you just don't want to just pay your tax, and especially we'll get into e-com in a second here, the question might be even open to, can you afford to even just look at your accounts like that if you're running an e-com business? So that's a really good explanation. So let's get into the basics of FP&A for e-com, let's say. And what makes e-com special and different, and what do you have to look out for?
Well, like I was saying, it's dynamic and changing every day. And so the really awesome thing about e-com, I honestly think there's something about the American dream of I have an idea for a product and I'm able to make millions, get rich by selling this to people. Shark Tank, obviously, I think has helped popularize that idea. It's also quite easy compared to other types of entrepreneurship to get started. Easy to start is not the same as easy to succeed in, though. Another unique dynamic in e-com that makes this different than other areas is that if you do have success and you do strike the right combination of factors, you can succeed very quickly and go from zero to millions in revenue in a way that's unlike other sectors. And so it's amazing. It's an amazing industry to be in. It's also a double-edged sword in some ways because of that ability to scale very quickly. There's also, you know, the ability to have your revenue decline very quickly, right? And it may not even be up and down like that. What I really mean is these things are volatile and not as easy to predict as some B2B type businesses as well. So it's a challenge.
When we got pregnant with our first kid, me and my wife decided we'd never flown business, our first class, you guys call it. And we were like, oh, let's start an e-commerce business so we can turn left when we go onto a plane. That would be cool because we didn't have enough money to turn left. So we started the business and we bought bags in from China and AliExpress. We brought them into South Africa where we were living. We advertised them. We had sales. And then we realized just getting the bags was one thing. And then getting them out into the hands of the customers was like twice the effort. We didn't last very long. I think out of like 100 bags, we managed to get the bags into about 50, maybe 50 customers' hands, you know? And after a couple of weeks of that, or a couple of months of that, and also a newborn, we were like, no, you need to be tougher, made of tougher stuff to make this work. So I'll leave it to the professionals. But it's interesting what you say there in that it's the distillation of entrepreneurship in that you don't really need it. Like if I want to be a lawyer, I got to be a lawyer. I want to be a programmer, I got to be a programmer, you know, like, but really actually, if you've got energy and drive, all the tools are there. Is that where you're getting at? You see, you don't need a specialization. You just, anyone with the will and drive these days can kick open a e-commerce store and get going, right?
It's really amazing. If you're a little bit tech savvy, you don't need to be the most tech savvy. You can sign up for Shopify. You can find a supplier on Alibaba. You can find a 3PL, not that hard to Google. There's several, and you can start selling, right? There's other things you need to do. You need to set up an LLC and do your books, right? But you need to market, of course, right? But it is fairly straightforward if you can figure it out. And there's a ton of content on the web teaching people how to do it. There's courses you can take. So it is amazing. And it is quite amazing. It's created a lot of wealth in the world for e-com entrepreneurs. I don't think people appreciate or talk about enough. Amazon FBA alone has created a lot of millionaires, right? It's been an amazing wealth creation platform for people. As much as everyone complains about that sector, right? Amazon FBA, which is very hard and has challenges, of course, and getting harder, but it's been an amazing open platform.
So maybe you can just explain, what is that?
What Amazon FBA means is that an independent business can list and sell their products on Amazon, and they can send that inventory into an Amazon warehouse to take advantage of the Amazon fulfillment network, importantly, which means Prime. You can get it,
right?
The customer can get it in 1 to 2 days. And despite that process of the customer buying the product, as well as the fulfillment, both being handled by Amazon, it's still an independent business where the brand holds title to the inventory until it's sold. It's not the same as wholesale, where a brand might sell their products in bulk to Amazon at a discounted price, and then it would be Amazon's problem to go sell that to the customer. That's just a different business model. And it's tricky because to us as consumers, we don't know the difference most of the time, right? We think we're buying something on Amazon, we're hitting buy now and it's showing up a day or two later. And that's an amazing experience. But behind the scenes, there's a lot of independent small businesses that have really grown on the back of that and taken advantage of Amazon's customer base.
You literally don't even need to handle the products anymore. You can just source it from China, get it shipped to Amazon, and away you go. You don't even, it's like an electronic business in a way, even if you're selling a physical good. Let's go into the detail a little bit more about, like, typically before customers come to you, like, where are they at and what are the mistakes that you see them making?
I think the sweet spot where we help is an e-com brand that's growing, is profitable, but they're struggling with cash flow because there's this dynamic, right? That as you start to see success, you get a million, two, three, four, five in sales, you might be profitable on your P&L, and yet your cash flow is actually going the other way, and you may not have cash in the bank to fund that next inventory purchase. And that gut feeling of, I think I'm profitable, but I don't have cash, what's happening, is something that we can help unpack and give brand founders the tools to understand, the tools to make, you know, quick and confident decisions to help them achieve, you know, positive cash flow. And so why is it such an issue in the e-com world? It is unique. Let's say your product is $20 landed cost. You sell it for $100. So you're 80% gross margin. Then you take out all your other costs, shipping and fulfillment. Marketing is a big one, overhead and people, and you have 10% net margin. Well, that 10%, yes, you are profitable on the P&L basis. That's an accrual accounting method. But if you are funding inventory purchases for the next year, and if you're buying from China, it takes quite a while. There's long lead times. You have to pay a deposit. Once it's ready, it has to get on a boat, has to ship, get checked into the port, get into your warehouse. All these things take time before it's available for sale. Further compounded if you have, if you're launching new products or going into new channels, right? So the inventory need is very large. Going back to my example of $100 price on a product that costs you $20 landed cost, but you only made 10% net profit on, right? If you're funding those inventory purchases for the next year at $20, right, you're not going to be able to cover that with the profits you made from the prior year or the prior period, right? And so that's the challenge. It's a very common challenge. There's tools we can use to combat that, right? Putting debt instruments in place, so whether it's a line of credit or working capital line, is common and something that can help.
Okay, so to be in that situation, to be able to get a line of credit going, what are customers missing before they get to you? I mean, I need to raise debt to bridge this gap before I can sell what I'm going to receive. But what do the accounts need to look like? What's missing for folks, you know, in order to be able to get that debt? Does the accounts need to be at a certain standard or a certain format? Or, you know, is there a certain question you need to be asked? What's stopping them from getting access to the debt that they might need?
Well, I mean, the first question, even before you go to the bank, right, is like, how much money should I look to take on as a loan? And what can I afford? And what cost of capital? Debt is a powerful tool, and it can unlock value, right? If it can allow us to fund inventory purchases that support growth. But at the same time, if we take on too much debt without the ability or plan to pay it down, that can kill your business.
Yeah.
Quite literally, right? So you need to go in with a plan and a model to understand what the goal is and why we need it. That's A. B, the thing is, you need to also understand the duration of that debt, and you need to match it to, when I was talking about that supply chain and all the time it takes to get from creating a PO to converting that back into revenue, right? When that product can be sold, you need to match that duration with the tool you're using, right? And if it's going to be too short term, you're just going to come back to the well again. You're not going to solve the problem. So understanding the cash conversion cycle, which is another metric we track, which is a measure of how long it takes to convert inventory back into cash in your bank account. And understanding that is important as well.
So contrasting that with my business a little bit, which is I sell software, I get paid up front in advance, like monthly or annually. This is why I don't see this problem showing up. But in my previous businesses, sometimes I've showed up to my accountant. He says, "Congratulations, James, you made a profit. Here's your tax bill for 50 grand or whatever." And I go and look in the account and say, "Well, I thought you told me I had a profit and there's nothing to pay this 50 grand tax bill with." Is that actually the death knell? Is that when people give up, when they realize tax time comes around and that's the time it's all over, party's over, and they decide to fold up?
I mean, taxes are a huge challenge as well here. We don't prepare taxes in our firm, but we certainly model them and help people plan for paying them as part of the FP&A and CFO services. And you're right, like I can go back to my example I gave before. If you're making a 10% net profit and you're paying a portion of that in taxes, you have even less cash left over to go and fund that next inventory purchase. And that's an important thing that we include in our models and forecasts as well. Sales tax is a common gotcha. If your accountant is not well-versed in e-commerce, this could be a big issue for you. If you're Shopify or whatever platform you're using, your settings are set correctly to collect sales tax in all the different states, you will be collecting cash every day for that sales tax, but you have a liability that grows as well. And so that cash in and cash out should not be hitting your P&L. It should go to the balance sheet. And that's something that we always look for and try to fix with the brands that we work with. And you might say, well, what's the difference? If it hits revenue and then comes out as an expense, why does it matter? Because it's net zero on the P&L. Well, there are two good reasons for that. One is you don't pay it as you go, so your margins are going to be screwed up. The timing of the revenue coming in and the expense are going to be different, and that'll screw up your margins. You won't have a clean view. And then second, if you're not categorizing that sales tax appropriately, you're going to think that it's cash available to you because it is cash that you've collected. And so if you go ahead and spend that on something else, you might be surprised when that liability to the states comes up later and you may not have it set aside. So that is a common thing that does trip people up.
So we have a situation here where you can be pretty much a civilian walking in off the street, starting this business, seems to be doing great. And there's all these tripwires available to you if you're not used to it. So you mentioned the P&L there. Like, what does a e-com P&L look like compared to your traditional COGS and overhead P&L?
We have a very specific way we set up the chart of accounts for all of our brands that we work with. And this works for any e-com business. You start with gross revenue and importantly, book discounts and refunds as separate accounts so that you're not lumping those together. That's a very important one because discounts are an important part of what we do in the e-com world, especially during peak seasons. So that's a trend that you need to be able to unpack. Then what we call gross margin and what we call COGS at Free to Grow CFO includes the landed cost of a product. So the product itself, any packaging, and then the cost to get it from its origin into your warehouse as well would be included there.
And out to the consumer as well?
Not to the consumer, just landed into your warehouse.
Okay.
So taking out that landed cost gets you to what we call the gross margin. Then we have a section called variable order costs, which is what you're getting at. It includes the outbound shipping costs, so FedEx or DHL or UPS to the consumer, as well as any other storage or pick and pack fees charged by the warehouse. Importantly, this is often overlooked as well, merchant fees. So it's going to cost you 3-4% of every transaction to collect that cash. And so that can be modeled as a percent of your revenue. Sometimes we see other variable costs like royalties, depending on the category and product. There's other things we can include there, but those are the main ones. And then we look at a contribution margin before marketing, after we subtract those variable costs.
Okay, let's unpack a little bit why we structure it like that. Sounds like this is when you were back looking at all these e-com businesses in the roll-up business, that's what you wish everyone had. Why do you want it that way? What decisions can you make when it's structured in that way?
I've seen some scary stuff, James, like really scary stuff. And you don't have to do it exactly like I'm saying, right? You can customize it your way, but I really do urge people to really have clean books. This is a little tangent because you said that, but in that job, when I was doing M&A and buying businesses, there were these amazing entrepreneurs who had scaled their business to multiple seven figures. And it was really disappointing for everyone when it turned out in the financial due diligence process that their profits were not what they thought they were. And so the books being inaccurate, they just weren't making the prophet that they thought they were. And so that was a bummer for everyone really involved. If you're ever going to sell, if you're ever going to get valuation on your business, you do need clean books. So that's a tangent.
And this structure, I guess what I'm getting at here is the landed cost. That's how you negotiate your sourcing. That's all about your sourcing, I guess, and how you can get it, your transport to that stage, which is maybe a different responsibility even in the business, like maybe someone's your buyer, et cetera, and you can manage them against that line in the P&L. And then you have the actual distribution, which is a lot more variable, I guess, because, you know, people are in different states, different locations. You know, there's not a lot that you can do about that maybe. And then it finally drops down to the return before your marketing. So I guess what I'm getting at is, if it's structured that way, does this let you identify where the opportunities are quicker, or does it allow you to benchmark easier to know, okay, you know, this doesn't feel right, we're spending too much on marketing, or we should be able to get it landed for a better price?
Bingo. Yeah. So it's about unpacking where the changes in your margins are happening month over month and year over year very quickly. And by breaking it out this way, we can very quickly say, oh crap, our warehouse fees have gone through the roof for some reason. Or alternatively, our margins across the board compressed. Oh, it turns out we way over discounted.
Right.
Right. It's very easy to unpack those trends when you structure it this way. And of course, there's additional analysis that will always be needed. You may say, okay, discounts are a problem, but if you sell both on Shopify and Amazon, right, you'll have to go a layer deeper and say, which platform was this a problem on? And that's also part of the FP&A, right? You know, we can do P&Ls for both channels or other channels as well. It saves time because these are the major buckets and you always have to go deeper, but you know very quickly where to look, right? Rather than some people have landed cost of the product and shipping to the customer and merchant fees all lumped into one category. And when that's the case, you're going to spend a lot of time just figuring out where to even look. And if you don't have a CFO or FP&A person on your team, it's going to be overwhelming because there is so much data to sort through from different sources. So it is a challenge. And I understand why it's hard for brand founders to do without a CFO.
The P&L used to pay your taxes with, so to speak, that is just very hard to manage a business from because there's no connection there. But what you're describing there reminds me of like almost more like a sales pipeline where you're, you know, if I have a sales pipeline and I have people advertising and then I have people booking in for a demo and then people doing the demo, I can identify whose problem it is at each stage of that funnel. And then I can go deeper. But then if it's not categorized in a meaningful way, I can't diagnose it. So
yeah,
that makes total sense.
Everything is a data problem at the end of the day, right? Whether it's your sales funnel for Procurement Express or it's financial data for an e-commerce business, segmenting data into different buckets and having a clear understanding of what goes into those different data points, how you take out insights quickly is by having a very clear data architecture. And so it's the same in accounting, right? It's just a data problem.
Okay, so straight away, I can see the difference between getting my taxes done and actually what you're talking about is using the accounts to drive the business. Could you tell us a bit about this story of the $400K in inventory you quote unquote found for a customer who came on board?
Yes, James, this is the part where you stand up and you go look in the cushions on your chair there and there's a surprise.
I'll get it later. Yeah.
That's the next level podcast experience. But yes, happy to tell this story. I mean, it's a common story in that when we started working with this brand in particular, they knew things were a little messy. Things had been going well for the business, but they had just grown by being scrappy and everything was done in spreadsheets and it had been totally fine up until a certain point. And it just started getting a little more uncomfortable as they kept growing. And they said, can you help us clean this up? We just need a little more forecasting and modeling support. And so we dove in, and what it turned out by helping them just clear up the internal record keeping was that we couldn't find $400,000 of inventory. Like it was lost. We couldn't find it. It just didn't add up. It didn't reconcile at the end of the day. And so there's no magic story here about how we found it exactly. It's just hard work and getting into the details by scrubbing through every PO and understanding all the different data sources, like I was saying, between the factory records, the shipment records, the receiving records from the 3PL, we were able to uncover that they had $400,000 in inventory value that they did not know about. And so they were quite happy. I'd like to be able to promise that for every brand we work with. We will certainly try. It goes to show and score the point home, right? That it's a data problem, and keeping very careful records. In the usual case, you're going to be able to make faster and better decisions. In this best case, you're actually going to be able to find value, in this case, $400,000.
Let's speculate. I mean, there's a very real value you brought there in terms of, it sounds like someone ordered stuff and they didn't even receive it, or they sent it out to the customer and they didn't mark it. Either way, they're making decisions about their inventory levels off the wrong data. So they could have gone and bought more stock than was necessary. And then, as we talked about earlier, that could have slammed them into the wall, even in terms of their balance sheet was out of whack, so they didn't have an accurate view. If someone come and tried to buy them at that stage, then they would have discovered these things, and you know, their trust would have been lost in the finances, and that would have decreased their valuation. So there's all these real world sort of impacts.
Yeah, if I told any e-com brand that they had magically like that, an extra 400,000 of inventory value, not just like at the supplier, but in their warehouse available for sale today, a lot of people would be, you know, hugging me and kissing me, right? That feels like magic. So that was a cool story we were able to work on.
Okay, so let's finish it up with the traditional question I have here for guests, which is, who's their business hero and why?
Oh, it's maybe a cheesy answer to the question, James, but the answer is my dad. He is incredibly talented at what he does. As a kid, I always thought he knew every fact about everything in the business world and just the world at large. So I always thought that was really cool. But I think there's this unique thing about him that makes him special, which is marrying that talent at what he does with being extremely humble and just a great guy to everyone he encounters, no matter who it is, throughout his entire career. And really building a reputation for that with the people that he works with. So I probably fall well short of that, but I definitely try to emulate that dynamic in my own career.
I think you're selling yourself short there. Maybe we need to sell you on a sales course to even things out there. That has actually surprised me about, you know, I've interviewed maybe 100 CFOs now at this stage on the podcast. And I was expecting to go into this focused on the hard skills, you know, the P&L, all the stuff. I was kind of going into it to learn for myself. And what surprised me most is the most successful are actually very adept with the soft skills and the ability to really get on. More like diplomats. Diplomats have hard messages to deliver sometimes, but that skill set is the skill set that I see in the really successful CFOs and fractional CFOs.
You nailed it on the head. I completely agree. At a certain point, the financial analysis, you become skilled enough to, you know what you're doing. That part is less hard. The part that is always a challenge is communicating sometimes very nuanced financial concepts to a founder of a brand who may or may not have a finance background. But furthermore, it's not just explaining it to them. It's also making it digestible and actionable for the whole team. That's us doing our job at our best. It's when the insights we create are communicated and disseminated through the whole team to, you know, cause a shift in strategy or tactics. And that's what I get excited about. I love helping people make different and better decisions in their business. And it really does make a difference in their life, right? They're so stressed out. It's really hard for all the reasons we discussed earlier to manage these brands. And so if we can bring some confidence around the decision-making, that's really where we love what we do when we can have an impact on that.
All right. So I lied to you. This is my final question. Okay. Have you told your dad that he is your hero?
Well, I'm just going to send him the link to the podcast.
There we go. Now we've done some good work here today. Jeff, you've been a star. Thank you very much. I really feel like I understand better the e-com world, and I enjoy your obvious enthusiasm for the business of it. I'm a huge business nerd. I can tell you are too. So it felt like hanging out with a friend. Thanks for coming along. How can people get in touch with you?
You can email me, Jeff, J-E-F-F, at freetogrowcfo.com, or just check out our website, freetogrowcfo.com, and just fill out the form, and I or my business partner will respond right away.
Okay. Well, if you've listened this far in the podcast, thank you very much. We send out insights every week, including financial updates and news, what's happening, as well as a software tip of the week. It's not always Procurement Express, I promise. We recommend a range of different software tools for the finance team. You can sign up for that at procurementexpress.com/newsletter. If you are a fractional CFO who has a specialism like Jeff and you'd like to come on the show and talk about what you're passionate about, I'd love to hear from you, james.kennedy@procurementexpress.com. Okay, Jeff, thanks very much for coming along. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been fun. And yes, I admit, I am a self-proclaimed business nerd just like you.
Great. I love it.